You're listening to a Spring Membership Drive edition of the KBOO Evening News for Monday, May 13th, 2024. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-245-2158. Our production team for tonight's newscast includes Sam Bowman and Jasmine Moss. The producer and engineer is Althea Billings. Special thanks to Mike Moan, Suzanne Potter, Jill Freitas, Catherine Carley, Terry D., and Dr. Anthony Lysowitz. The director of Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Ezra.
And I'm Nina Mayfair. All of our KBOO programs, including the Evening News, are supported by our members. KBOO is currently in our spring membership drive, and so now is a great time to join. If you would like to become a member and support our programming, you could go to bit.ly/KBOO or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for Labor Radio.
You're listening to KBOO Portland.
KBOO News in Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
You are listening to KBOO News in Depth. I'm Althea Billings. An empty lot in the Humboldt neighborhood of Portland isn't abandoned. 5422 North Mississippi has been used as a gardening and gathering space for locals. But over the past few weeks, a development plan has emerged to turn the lot into 68 luxury apartments. Neighbors are pushing back. I spoke to two of them to learn more.
I am Major Galactic, she, they pronouns.
I'm Heather, and I use she, they pronouns.
Well, welcome, both of you. To start out here, can you tell me a little bit about your neighborhood?
Yeah, so we live in Humboldt neighborhood. It's part of historic Albina District. And I'm not sure if listeners know this, but in Humboldt neighborhood, we have the smallest amount of green space. So we have only 0.58% of all of the land in Humboldt is green space. And so, yeah, that's something we're working to preserve.
And that's comparatively lower to all the other neighborhoods surrounding that area.
What do you like about your neighborhood?
I like that there's a lot of people from different cultural backgrounds in our neighborhood. We have a lot of, we have a halal market, we have the In-N-Out. It's just great to see people from all different backgrounds. Yeah, and I think there's also, there's still some affordable things in our neighborhood, which I really appreciate.
Mm-hmm. I love opening up my windows and just hearing neighbors play music or just cars driving by playing music and the music that they listen to. It just makes me feel like I'm at home.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, I understand there's a development plan for the lot at 5422 North Mississippi in the Humboldt neighborhood in Portland that your group has been pushing back on. What is planned for this development?
They are planning to build a 5-story building with 68 luxury apartments and only 10 parking spaces.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Mm-hmm. And it wipes out a lot of the local wildlife that lives there currently.
Yeah, so what is the lot used for now?
Right now, the folks who live in the Falcon building use the land for gardening and for community gathering. We've also in the past thrown events for the community.
Mm-hmm.
There's also a wedding held there, too.
Yeah, we've had weddings there, funerals, celebrations of graduations. It's a very meaningful plot of land for our community.
Yeah, a multi-use space, it sounds like. To that, what would be lost if this development were to proceed?
A place of gathering, really. Because there is no communal space in that building, we would have nowhere else to go. And so from that, we would just lose our community. We'd be forced to go elsewhere.
Yeah, and there are 5 trees on the lot right now, one of which is a cedar tree that towers over 70 feet tall. It's an old growth cedar, so it's over 100 years old. We have a fruit-bearing fig tree, and we have a rare sweet chestnut tree that bears nuts for us in, I think it's the fall. And we have folks from the Vietnamese community that come out and harvest those. We have so much wildlife on the land, tons of vital pollinators, our garden plots. What else am I missing? We have a family of black crowned night herons that nest in the cedar tree. Obviously, tons of squirrels and crows, but scrub jays, you know, all kinds of beautiful animal and plant life that we get to watch.
When did you guys find out about this development? What's the timeline there?
It feels like a few weeks ago.
Yeah, yeah. May 3rd is when they posted the development notice.
May 3rd, okay. Is this gentrification? Is that what you would call it?
Yeah, absolutely. This is yet another behemoth, in my opinion, hideous and uninteresting piece of architecture that towers over our neighborhood. There's no buildings in our neighborhood that are over 3 stories tall, I believe. And really, if you just walk around the neighborhood, you can see how much this does not fit. But it also is an example of environmental displacement in that we'll lose green space. It's economic displacement in that we're very likely to see high rents in this spot that will just price out neighbors.
To add on to that, it doesn't, there was no community input in this plan, and so they're not taking considerations from people who live in that neighborhood and would know better.
What would you say to somebody who maybe pushes back on this idea, you know, we're in a housing crisis, this is an empty lot, that this could be made into more housing units? How do you respond to that kind of line of thinking?
Yeah, we're not against development. Like, maybe if it's affordable housing and that's what the community wants, we're all for it. But I think what it just like comes back to, what does the community need? What does that neighborhood need? If it's affordable housing, build that. I don't know that 5 stories with 68 apartments offering 10 on-site spaces is enough. And I don't know, the typical person in that neighborhood, could they afford that? We don't know like how much they're gonna charge for rent. And so it's kind of up in the air.
Yeah, and I would also say that there are a number of developments happening in our neighborhood right now. And we see a lot of these sort of box apartments sitting vacant. So I don't believe that so much that there's a housing crisis so much as there's an affordable housing crisis. And our neighborhood is made up of a lot of working class families. So this doesn't seem to be the right type of housing to address our needs.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. This is privately owned property, is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Out of this whole process and this organizing that you've been engaged in, what would you like to see happen?
Currently, it's like fenced off right now. I'd love to see the fence gone, and maybe it just gets opened up to be a community green space where everyone can enter and shelter.
Yeah, some of the events that we've held, I think, have shown the promise and the possibilities. It could be a community garden for the entire neighborhood. It could be an event space. We could show movies there, you know. I think there's so many possibilities. And the first step is, of course, to stop this development. But the next step is to figure out how to get this land into the hands of the community so that they can determine its best use.
What do you wish people knew about this issue?
I mean, I think first and foremost that this has happened before on this exact plot of land, and it's also happened just a few blocks away from us. So we know it's possible to stop this development. There's a park, I want to say it's called the Sumner Albina Park. It's in between the Red Fox and the Cherry Sprout Market. And there was, several years ago, a development planned there. And the neighborhood was able to stand in solidarity against it, and it's now a community park. Back in 2019, this land was sold to a different developer. Our community formed a tenants union and organized to stop it. and we were successful in getting the local design build firm to quit and ultimately to get the developer to abandon their plans. We requested at that time that they donate the land to a land trust for the community, but instead of doing that, they just sold it, of course, at an enormous profit to another developer. So I really want folks to know this is possible, because we sometimes hear when we canvass in the neighborhood, like, oh, but what can you do? You can't do anything. You can't stop this. And we can. You know, we can do that by standing together. And our next step for that is to get as many people to this public comment meeting that's coming up on Thursday.
Well, yeah, let's go there. What can you tell me about this public comment meeting on the 16th?
Yeah, so this is going to be the first opportunity for members in the community to make their voice heard about how they feel about this development. This will be hosted by the developer as well as the local design build firm. And we have an opportunity to show up in huge numbers and in solidarity, just like we did last time, and speak out. Everyone can really speak from the heart about why they may or may not want to see this go up. But having people there is huge. And speaking out and telling their truth about their experiences in this neighborhood and what they want to see in that space.
And it's virtual, is that right?
It is. Yeah. It's on Zoom.
Okay, cool. Well, if our listeners are interested in learning more about this potential development and the work that you're doing, what's the best way for them to do that?
They can follow us on Instagram. We are Albina Neighbors.
Yeah. You can email us at hello@albinaneighbors.com. Sorry. You can email us at hello@albinaneighbors.org.
.org. Okay. Do you have any final thoughts? Anything we didn't touch on that you wanted to mention?
I think the one other thing to mention is that they are planning to break ground in July, which is kind of unprecedented. We have not had this experience before of them trying so quickly to get this land destroyed and bulldozed. So, really can't emphasize enough how much we would love to see community support out at the meeting. We do also have a petition that you can access at the link tree in our bio.
Well, thank you both so much for stopping by to talk with me. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
That was Major Galactic and Heather, two Portlanders in the Humboldt area who were organizing to save a community green space in their neighborhood. Their group is on Instagram @albinaneighbors, and the virtual public comment meeting with developers is scheduled for Tuesday, May 16th from 6 to 9 p.m. For KBOO News In Depth, I'm Althea Billings.
Policing Justice is an exhibition currently on display at the Portland Institute for Contemporary Art that examines police violence in Portland and its relationship to longer local and national histories of oppression. We're joined today by Nina Amstutz, Associate Professor of the History of Art and Architecture at the University of Oregon, who along with Cleo Davis curated the exhibition, and Mac Smith, journalist and moderator for one of the panels. Mac was also commissioned to write an essay, which appears in the exhibition packet. Nina, Mac, thank you for being here.
Thanks for having us.
So policing justice opened just under 4 years after the murder of George Floyd in Minneapolis and the racial justice demonstrations that followed. Of course, it wasn't only the killing of Mr. Floyd that fueled the protests in 2020. Communities all across the country have lists of the names of those they've lost to white supremacist and state-sanctioned violence. Portland is no exception. Nina, you and Cleo put together an exhibition that, as you wrote in your curatorial statement, offers an opportunity to reckon with our situated histories and imagine futures that have long been out of reach. Could you start by providing us with an overview of the inspiration behind this exhibition and the central themes you hope the audience will engage with through the artwork?
Of course, yeah. So the exhibition really does emerge out of 2020. And, you know, what was most striking about these protests about against police brutality was the extent to which they were met with so much police violence. And that happened certainly nationally, but it especially happened locally. As many of our listeners will remember, those protests lasted longer in Portland than anywhere else in the country. And they were met with just a tremendous amount of police use of force. And use of force like that on that scale usually doesn't come out of nowhere. There's always a larger history and context that led us to that point. And we really hoped in this exhibition to unpack that history. And we asked a series of local artists and organizations to sort of think through that history from different perspectives. And so the artists have looked at the history of policing in Portland from the intersecting perspectives of racial, environmental, juvenile, and spatial justice. And their projects all sort of start from one of those jumping off points, but they go much further. And the artists, you know, they were asked to look at this material sort of from a historical perspective, but we also want this exhibition to really take stock of, you know, what has happened in the last 4 years towards police accountability. And also the artists have sought to imagine a variety of different futures as well for public safety. And so where do we kind of go from here is also a central theme that we hope viewers will take away from it.
Thank you. And as you mentioned, it was sort of a collaborative process with the local community groups and artists and researchers responding to a general prompt. Can you share a specific example of a piece that demonstrates how this collaborative process resulted in the final work that we'd see at the exhibition?
Yeah, sure. I'm happy to speak to that. And so, you know, I think that every single project really, you know, started with kind of one initiating artist or group that, you know, really kind of works in the specific area that we wanted to look at. And so Don't Shoot Portland, for instance, that, you know, they have a real expertise in the history of racist policing in our community. And so their project is very much, or their organization is very much a community organization, not only in the art making process, but also in terms of the ways in which they mine and liberate the archive, which is central to their installation. They have documents that look at the history of racist policing here that date back to the 1920s. And they bring those into dialogue with more recent material. And so, you know, their process has been one of working with universities, working with community members, and also in relation to the exhibition, they worked very closely with the research and arts agency in Britain called Forensic Architecture, which also has an installation in the exhibition. And Forensic Architecture, they created an installation that includes an investigation into the use of tear gas locally. And their work has a real global reach. They're based in Britain, and they investigate human rights violations really around the world, but they rely heavily on local collaboration as well. And so Don't Shoot Portland worked closely with them. Don't Shoot Portland also, you know, commissioned their own report on riot control agents locally that then sort of fed into Forensic Architecture's research. And so the collaboration there, I think, in that project was both sort of very grassroots local and actually kind of became global even, which is really beautiful to see. I would just mention a couple more examples. I think, you know, the Black Aesthetic Studios piece, which is the piece that looks at the intersection of urban planning and policing practices in Portland, that project starts with Cleo Davis, who's also the curator, co-curator, and Kane Talton Davis, sorry. And they work closely with an architect, Robert Clark. And so their project has a kind of Afrofuturist architectural dimension. It's three shipping containers that have been transformed into this new Black aesthetic of architecture. And then the content sort of within those shipping containers is very historical and based on artifacts, many of which were collected by Cleo and Kane Davis, and also through the help of Kimberly Moreland, who has a background in historic preservation and local history, Black history. She's also the president of the Oregon Black Pioneers. So I think in that project as well, we really see the ways in which different practitioners within the community are then working together to build something very unique. And they, you know, all the projects were also very self-determined. And so the artists were building their kind of collaborative network from their own communities as well. And that is something that they did completely independently. And so there's also in the fabrication process, a collaborative dimension that it has a much farther reach deep into the community. So those are two examples. The last one I'll just mention is master artist Michael Bernard Stevenson Jr. He is a local educator who has taught and worked with Black youth, especially in a variety of local schools. And in his project, which looks at the history of policing in relation to youth in our community, he actually engaged a lot of students to help build his installation. There is also work in that installation that comes from his podcast, the Tin Can Phone podcast, which started at Columbia River Correctional Institution, working with incarcerated and as well as formerly incarcerated artists and individuals. And so that collaborative network also sort of reaches quite far beyond just the two of them who sort of started the project.
Yeah, Sam and I were able to visit on Sunday, and I'll just tell you that those listening, an hour is not enough. So plan accordingly. There's a lot to really dig into and digest there.
So for anyone just joining us, we are talking with curator Nina Amstutz and journalist Max Smith about the Policing Justice Project, which includes an installation at the Portland Institute for Contemporary Art.
There's also a film series and workshops and a bunch of other programming associated with the exhibition. Is there anything in particular that you would like to mention around that?
Our film series kicks off with the Portland premiere of the film Reimagining Safety by the director Matthew Solomon, as well as a short by Corey Alaya called Is Portland Dying? And so that's a multi-episode series that he's created, and he'll be airing episode one, which specifically has to do with policing in Portland. And so the directors will both be at the Clinton Street Theater, which is where our film series takes place. The films start at 7 p.m. And there'll be a Q&A moderated by Alex Vitale, again, our keynote speaker for the symposium as well, who is also in the film Reimagining Safety. And so that's a great kickoff. And then we have two local films coming up on March 21st, Arresting Power, Resisting Police Violence in Portland, Oregon from 2015. And then on April 4th, Aileen Boy, The Life and Death of James Chassa. Or Chassie. And then the last film is on April 18th, Do Not Resist from 2016. That is a great film that, again, has much more of a national focus, particularly on police training and the militarization of the police. And so all those are definitely worth coming to see at the Clinton Street Theater. We also have two additional events coming up at PICA, actually in the exhibition space on March 24th from 4 to 8 p.m., we have an artist-led workshop called Artists, Power, and Practices, and that's hosted by Don't Shoot Portland and Mika Martinez, who is a local photographer who was very active also in 2020 photographing the protest movement. And they are going to lead a workshop with five other artists on ethical visual storytelling, which is great for any people interested in photography and filmmaking and working with vulnerable communities. That's a great place to learn from some local experts and practitioners. And then our last event that I want to just mention is a podcast launch and listening session, which will also be at PICA on April 24th. 7th from 1 to 3 p.m. And that's called Fight the Power, Do Not Harm, the story of the Black Cross Healthcare Collective. And that's a new podcast, just a one episode, 1 hour podcast that's produced by Jody Darby, Hona Veerkamp, and Aaron Yankee. And it looks at the Black Cross Healthcare Collective, which is a group that is sort of a very grassroots healthcare organization that created an antidote or a means of neutralizing pepper spray. So they were very active in treating protesters in ways that of course, our medical system is less able to do and on the ground, right? And so please also come out for all of those events.
There's a breadth of things to go see. There's no shortage or, you know, bad time to go. It'll be open for a couple of months. And we've got the films, we've got the symposium, we've got a lot of events that are coming up at different times. As always, this is Portland. Show up, you know, show up, get involved, getting, you know, engaged, talk to the people. All of us are in and out on a regular basis. So even if you just come through, you'll probably see an artist at some point. Just come and ask questions, hang out, see how to really be a part of it. You know, we have to, I think a big part of this is building a stronger community. And, you know, this activities like this just help us to see who our people are. So once you find each other, you know, show up.
Yeah, I would just piggyback on that and say that, you know, the exhibition is, and we say this right in the opening wall text, it's about Portland and it's for Portland. And we really hope that the community takes ownership of that exhibition. It's there to support all the community members and groups who have already been working toward police accountability for decades. And it's also there for folks who don't know much about this history to come and learn. You know, I'm a historian, and I always think the best place to begin in order to understand the present is to look back and see how we got here. And so we hope that the exhibition will provide that context, as well as serve as sort of a starting point for folks who want to get more involved to think about different ways of doing that. And, you know, I would just mention also, you know, one really beautiful sentiment that came up in our opening. We had an artist-led tour on February 23rd, and Ty Carpenter, who's one of the founders of Don't Shoot Portland, she said in her own reflections about her own project, that which is called the Center of Injustice, that, you know, we all have a role to play in creating social change and building the community that we want to live in. And that can mean really different things for different people. For some people, it'll be, you know, being on the ground. For others, it'll be handing out water bottles, and all those things are important. And so, you know, there's no bad way to get involved. So come on out and enjoy the exhibition and meet people from your community. And that's a great place to start.
Thanks so much. Is there anything that we didn't talk about that you would think it's important to mention?
Maybe, I guess one thing I might add is that, you know, the exhibition, it's a really moving and intense experience. I think there are a lot of really heartbreaking stories that are told in the space. And, you know, we want our visitors to come out and sit in that discomfort. But also I want to say that, you know, the exhibition, I think, is also really hopeful, and it does imagine a better future. And so there are those two dimensions. And so come and notice all that hopefulness and possibility. That's really what we want folks to take away from the exhibition.
So we've been talking with Nina Amstutz and Max Smith about the Policing Justice Project that is open currently at the Portland Institute of Contemporary Art. Thanks so much for being with us today.
Thanks
for having us. Yeah.
For KBOO Evening News, I'm Sam Bowman.
And I'm Jazz.
This is Norman Solomon saying that you're listening to non-commercial, listener-sponsored, volunteer-driven community radio, KBOO, Portland, 90.7 FM.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications